This one's good if it goes.
Oh, it did. Holy goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go. Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Jones. Oh,
yes.
Oh, I can't believe it. Are you serious?
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, better known as Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich. We're going to have Coach Mark Adams, the new head coach at Texas Tech, join us. But there is a rumor going around that Dan Dukich has something to get off his chest. So you know what? When he has something to get off his chest and wants to talk about something, I have no choice but to listen.
I got two things. First, my Dukich Cycles for the City t-shirt that I'm wearing. We just gave away 73 bicycles to inner city kids in Indianapolis. I'm very proud of that. But that's not what I'm here for. You know that I hate the media. Even though some might say I am in the media, I have been so misrepresented by the media. I hate the media. I hate them even more. I'm going to tell you why. Did you know that the NBA has set itself up that the media voting cost Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum $30 million each, because in the NBA's infinite wisdom, the Supermax deal is tied into media voting for first, second, third team, all NBA. So Mitchell and Tatum didn't make that. So because some guys whose biggest concern is whether or not the pizza is warm or the pizza is cold, some crumb-stained clown with a pen and a paper gets to decide that these two guys can make $30 million. You ever seen press row, Seth? You ever looked at these guys? You ever looked? They don't even respect their own job. They don't even. The greatest media guy is Mark Boyle, radio announcer for the Pacers. He wears a suit to every game. I said, "Boy, why do you wear a suit?" He goes, he taught me this. He goes, "Look at press row. Because look at how these slobs dress. They don't even care about their own job. I care about my job." These guys, with a pen and a paper, determine whether or not Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum are so valuable to their team that they should be able to be paid whatever the hell it is that they can be paid. But because in the CBA, it says, well, based on, you know, media voting for first or second, whatever team NBA, they can't get paid. Seth, I know you're uncomfortable with the language relative to the media. Tough.
Here's my thing. The players shouldn't have agreed to it.
Agreed. That's what I'm saying. Agreed. I'm not blaming
their own guys. Sold them out in a lot of ways,
right?
Because what they do is they, you know, a lot of times in the NBA, you know, those committees and the people that are player reps are old veteran players, and you know, they're probably negotiating obviously for the masses, but they're also negotiating in some ways maybe for the elite players in the league. But I mean, yeah, it to me, that's I didn't know that. That's great information. I mean, you talk about the future of the league. I mean, you talk about the, I mean, Donovan Mitchell.
Those two guys
are part of the future of the league, and guys that, you know, play through injury and show up every night and compete and are great ambassadors for the league. So I was surprised that, see, that's the thing, you know, when D Squared has something to say, I mean, you got to give him the floor because he educates. Now,
Seth, one thing about what you just said, if I'm a league, and this is the same thing with college basketball, take on all the other stuff, I want to know who's on whose team. And I want Donovan Mitchell, his career for the league segment, you know, to have the best opportunity to stay at Utah. I want Jason Tatum to have the best opportunity to stay at Boston. You can't take money out of their pocket because of some players should have said, we're either setting a committee of former players to determine the all league teams, or current players voting for the all-league teams. I don't care.
Current players make sense. They're in every single day. Well, let me give you another one about, we'll talk about money. All right. Last night we watched a meltdown of the Philadelphia 76ers. Absolute meltdown. And like, there are two things that kind of I head scratch. Number one is NBA players, coaches script substitution patterns. But when you're in a position where you're trying to, you know, improve your team in terms of the playoffs, why would you script? Why wouldn't you do it by feel? That's number one. Number two is, I don't know how much the Sixers are paying Embiid, Tobias Harris, or Ben Simmons. But Ben Simmons hasn't taken a shot in the fourth quarter in two games. Tobias Harris didn't make a field goal. He was 0 for 3 in the fourth quarter. And he's a good player. And Joel Embiid, I know he's playing hurt, was 1 for 5. Like, to me, you also allowed and gave up to the Hawks 140 points per 100 possessions in the second half. So, like, to me it's mind-boggling that the amount of money that you're going to pay those players, which they've earned, you know, and you know they have a right to earn it, but that when the game's online, as opposed to maybe Trae Young, who was phenomenal, why wouldn't we trap and get the ball out of his hands early, or the energy that the Hawks played with and the resilience, like, I don't know who the Sixers leader is. So like, we're going to just talk about these two games from yesterday. Do you know who the Sixers leader is as you watched them? Cause I didn't see anyone bring anyone together.
Nobody. No, Seth, over, I looked it up just now. 31.58 million for Embiid. Is he soft or what? Who did he down his leg?
Well, what about Ben Simmons? Like, Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons. $29 million for that act.
He can make a shot. I mean, like, you got to make a shot. Like, my thing is, I understand defenders. I understand defensive rebound, busting it out and pushing it out. I understand, you know, he's got good vision. Like, I'm not like, these guys are great players. But, I mean, like, in the playoffs, totally different game than regular season. In the playoffs, when you've seen the team time enough time, you're literally deciding who's going to you should be deciding who's going to beat you. And that was just, I mean, like, watching that last night was hard to watch. And then, you know, at the end of the game, I mean, in isolation plays or as the primary defender, Steph Curry, the guy he was guarding goes 6 for 7. Which, you know, like, you know, he's guarding Gallinari at the end of the game. He just lifts up, shoots over him. Lou Williams. Those are bad matchups. So I just, you know, I'm watching that series, and I was intrigued by the lack of toughness, direction, and leadership, on court leadership, of the Sixers. Like I saw on court leadership from the Hawks. I saw no one bringing anyone together. They barely talked to each other. It was wild to watch. I mean, as a coach, and again, I'm not an NBA guy. I don't know but as a coach, that was shocking to really kind of sit there and zero in. That was shocking to me.
I'll tell you, well, Tobias Harris, who I love his dad.
Yeah, 32, and his family really well.
32.74 million, 92, over 92 million for those three guys. Seth, a couple points I've never seen. Maybe I missed it, but I've never seen the hack-a-shack for a guard. And that's what they did with Ben Simmons last night. And I got to tell you, I've never seen a front-running big man crap down his leg like Embiid. He not only missed two free throws, you and I as coaches and people that aren't coaches don't understand this, but you and I can study body language better than 99.9% of the people, whether they're coaches or not. That's one of my all-time strengths, is studying body language. And I could see the body language was Embiid was scared to death. The boos were bothered. Everything was bothered. But the other side, Lou Williams kept him in. And then here's the big question for a coach. Here's the big question. You make this comeback. You get it back to 10, 12, 13. You go ahead and you put Trae Young in. He wasn't in at that time. I thought that was a great, great move by Nate McMillan to say, all right, I'm putting him back in. Now, people might say it's a no-brainer. But if you've coached and you know this group has brought you back from 27 and they're playing really, really well, one of the things you don't want to do is break that group up if you don't have to, right? I thought that was terrific by Nate McMillan, but I'm telling you, Seth, all right, let me ask you this. Sometimes it ain't great playing at home. Like, when those boos started coming.
Philadelphia especially.
Yes. I thought that impacted too, Seth.
Yeah. I did. All right. Here's the other one, and then we'll wrap it up. I won't even get into Brooklyn and that, because that's we'll learn more about that tonight. Paul George was terrific yesterday.
Yes,
he was Durant-esque. And I think Quinn Snyder's done a great job with his team, because he doesn't have any floor gamers. After, like, Donovan Mitchell has to work so hard. They're running doubles at him, getting the ball out of his hands, which I don't know why more people don't do. You can't let Donovan Mitchell beat. He gets 19 shots. He goes 6-for-19. As a team, they only have 15 assists because no one else, can make a play for anyone. I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, I'm watching this game, and then I look at the Clippers going small. Paul George, Reggie Jackson was phenomenal, and Morris was terrific. I look at the Utah Jazz, and you just see it shows you having floor gamers. Like, you put Mike Conley in that game, and now you try to defend Donovan Mitchell like they defended him, and that ball gets swung, and now Conley's getting in the lane, or he had 33 against the Clippers in one of the games this season, getting in the lane, drawing, kicking, getting them layups. They have no one who can get anyone else a shot or take pressure off of Donovan Mitchell, and that's the difference, and that's why I think Clippers, you know, even without Kawhi, are going to win that series.
You know, Seth, to your point about Donovan Mitchell, I've watched a lot of NBA in my lifetime. I know you have too, and we've seen some great players, but I've never seen a guy have to go 1-on-5, and I'm being literal here, a lot of, in the first couple games to go get buckets, and it wears you out. And I would say this, I'll never forget Pete Newell telling me, you know, Pete Newell, legendary coach, NBA, all that stuff. He told me a long time ago in the NBA, in these 7-game series, by game 3, sets are out the door. Sets, you know, we know, you know, NBA is so well scouted that, you know, you're not going to run anything tricky, right? What you have to be able to do is find the matchup and have guys that can, I'll never forget this. If you don't find guys that can make shots, you will not have a chance late in the series. Ben Simmons, maybe they win the series, I don't know, but all of a sudden, who's making shots? Paul George making shots, Reggie Jackson making shots. Who's not making shots? Well, you mentioned it, 6-for-19, Donovan Mitchell. I don't blame Donovan Mitchell. He's had to work so damn hard, and I agree with you totally on Conley. But by game 3 of a series, I've always watched this. It's and maybe it's game 4. You know what I mean? Maybe it's one.
Yeah.
But hey, actions. Hey, we're gonna say, you know, we're going to set this back here. Joe Harris got 2 layups on back screens the other day for Brooklyn. Guarantee you won't.
Just out top, and he's just looking over it, even though he couldn't still make that pass.
You won't see that anymore. But I do want to, before we go, I gotta eat a little crow. I've been all over Paul George, and he was awesome last night.
Terrific.
And Kevin Durant, we said on my radio show, Kevin Durant's got to go get 40-plus. He got 40-plus. He rebounded, and he didn't make a bad play. And George didn't make a bad play, really. I mean, maybe.
Neither of them forced anything.
No.
Neither of them forced that. Like, Kevin Durant didn't take a bad shot, didn't make a bad decision. By the way, affects the game defensively, rebounds the ball. Defense rebounds a fast break for George and Durant. I think the amazing things, both of those guys, they never made a wrong decision. Which it was really, to me.
Seth, the world we live in, what you saw in highlights, and rightfully so, was that big three by Durant late in the game, you know?
Right.
But you can't put the highlights of him always making the right play.
Yes.
You know, you can't do 10 minutes of highlights on whatever sports show you like to watch of him not forcing it, or Paul George not forcing it. And that's ultimately what makes their team much better.
Yep, I agree. There you go. NBA analysis. The great Mark Adams will be joining us, the new head coach of Texas Tech, but he's been a head coach for a long time and won it at every level. They got an incredible practice facility. And Dockage Cycles. Let me tell you something. As soon as mine comes in the mail, I'm putting it on. I'm traveling. I'm spreading the word. It'll be big. It'll be big as our team eventually takes on your group somewhere in a neutral course in America. With your fake handicap.
My handicap is real. If you would like to, every round is posted. There is chirping. Doc, here's how you can donate, because this is all donation-based. IndianaSportsCorp.org/DocketCycles. Every dime every cent goes to getting bikes, helmets, locks. We gave 72 away right after the June 1st or last week. We're going to get, our goal is 300. We're going to have another one after Labor Day and then a monster one at Christmas so that kids have bikes under their tables. Every dime goes, and I'll send you a note. I'll get you a T-shirt, but I want every kid in Indianapolis. And then last thing, Seth, I would love to partner with you in your city. Call me, email me, Dan at 1070 The Fan. This needs to happen because I know Seth Greenberg did. My whole life was bikes. I had three of them stolen, but I didn't care. I went out and worked, was a paper boy to get another bike. So.
There you go. I love it. For kids. There we go.
Yes, sir.
We'd like to welcome in Coach Mark Adams, the head coach of Texas Tech. Coacher, first of all, this is going to be a unique experience. This is the world's greatest podcast with Greenberg and Dockage. It's just kind of coaches talking ball, but you know, everyone talks about this new job of yours, and you know, you just mentioned it prior to coming on. But, Coach, this isn't your first rodeo. Like, you've been a head coach for a long time and had incredible—
That makes me sound old, sir.
Well, shoot, because I'm old. But, I mean, like, you had incredible, incredible success. So, like, what's the biggest difference sliding over in this moment in time at Texas Tech?
You know, yeah, I've done this— for 35 years, head coach for 25, so taking over six programs. But so I'm familiar with all the you know, all the challenges ahead of me. But this is new because this is my first time being the head coach at Texas Tech, my alma mater, a school that I love, and so excited to be in this leadership position. But you know, it's very challenging. I know both you guys have been former head coaches. You know all the hurdles and how hectic it is for that first year.
Coach, lots going on. I mean, lots going on with portals and NILs and transfers and keeping guys. Was the first order of business to kind of recruit your own guys?
Yeah, you know, it was, Dan. When I first got the position, my first priority was to, you know, reach out to all these players and talk to them about coming back. And very fortunate that we got the guys that we wanted to return. These guys wanted to be here for returning. And, of course, Kevin McCullough was top of my priority list. That was a starter for us last year and an unbelievable leader. And so he's been on board with us. And then Marcus Silva Santos is another one that we had back, two starters, and then a couple more with Nadalny and with Chibuzo. So we got four guys back, and then we had to get on the road, start recruiting, or at least get on Zoom and start recruiting.
This is curious to me. In the state of Indiana, there is literally no talk in the state legislature about the NIL. You know, Illinois, right next to us, is going to start up July 1st, being able to do that. Now, I don't know what colleges can or can't, but state law says they can. State law says they can't in Indiana. What's the situation in Texas? And looking at it from a recruiting perspective, how important is this for you to be on equal playing field where Indiana isn't with Illinois?
I think it's huge. You know, our legislature just passed an NIL a few days ago. So we're all moving in that direction. We have in-house, we've have an administrator that's responsible for that. And we've hired an outside group to help. We've got videos ready to go. We've been talking to our recruits about it. So again, this is part of this new frontier we all got to get ready for, but the players are aware of it, and it's an unbelievable recruiting tool and an opportunity for these guys to make some money while playing.
Coach, you know, crazy year, let's face it. I mean, none of us were ready for what happened last year. I mean, there's no cliff notes for dealing, coaching your team and managing the season in a pandemic. So you got through last season. You've become the head coach. Now you've got the guys back on campus. You're recruiting new guys. How different is it just now to be able to spend time with your guys to get back that connection? I mean, I know that's a big thing for you. I mean, what have you done since protocol has loosened up and now you can have greater access to your guys to build those bonds back up and to get to know the new guys. Because last year, new guys, you really didn't get even a chance to get to know.
Yeah, you think back a year ago, Seth, with Zoom, you know, that was so foreign to us. And now we've had to use this Zoom as we are here today. You know, through all your recruiting, if you want to reach out to your even your current players, it was through Zoom. And it was even a challenge even recruiting when you couldn't have these in-person visits. We've got this brand new facility that we just built, and we couldn't show it off except through Zoom pictures and videos. So a lot of challenges for us, but yeah, it's all about relationships and gaining those guys' trust and there's no way better to do that in person. And you know, the one thing about relationships, it takes time, and so you can't have those those relationships without getting to know those guys and sitting in front of them and talking to them, and then getting out on the floor and coaching them and getting your hands around them and actually giving them the support and love and that these guys need if you're gonna have that trust and have that connection with them. So we're excited to be back on floor with these guys and getting in front of them. That's the fun part about coaching. Some of this, you know, the portal and recruiting and building the program, the hiring and meeting with administrators and going over your vision is a lot of work. But the fun part is getting on the floor and getting out there and just being with them.
Hey, Coach, a year and a half, 2 years ago, you didn't even know what the hell Zoom was. None of us did. They didn't even know what it was, right? And now
I still don't. I've got my video guy here had to hook me up here.
I know. I remember talking to my neighbor. He goes, "Hey, we're doing all our meetings by Zoom." I'm like, "What the hell are you talking about? What is Zoom?" But it's become the number one thing. So now, when you get out, you're well known in Texas. You're obviously a guy that Texas didn't love and all that kind of stuff. Is this going to be your recruit? Is Texas going to be the basis of your recruiting? Is you know, junior college, Texas, that kind of thing?
Well, we, you know, I've got unbelievable junior college ties where 13 of my years were spent there out of my career. But, you know, in this day and age, you know, we've got some international players and we're recruiting all over the country. I've hired a great staff and one of those guys has connections on the West Coast, and I've got another that's, a lot more just in Texas and in the Metroplex in Houston. So, and then the third assistant that we've got has been doing this for about 25 years. So it's, you know, it's all about who you know and being able to reach out to those guys and lean on them. You know, we got a late start on recruiting, so we had to really rely on some of those relationships to help us get in with these kids. But you know, recruiting is an unbelievable challenge, and it's a bloodline of the success of your organization. So we're recruiting all year round, and everybody on the staff is always recruiting.
Let me ask you, Coach. We're going to get away from this technical stuff. You got to give me your best Sean Sutton story, because I mean, like, my man is the greatest. But I mean, there's got to be one story that just got to stand out, because I mean, there's not, spending time that time I spent with you guys a couple of years ago and spending time with him was just, it was fascinating to say the least.
You know, we enjoyed you coming out here. I want to get you out again, Seth. You too, Dan. You come with him. Keep him in mind. But,
I ain't coming with him.
But just, hey, when you came out here and talked to our guys, you were so insightful. And we saw the coach out in that passion you had for coaching, and it meant a lot to me. I looked over my notes just the other day. It was great for me, for my growth as a coach. For our guys, you know, you impacted them as well. So, but you know, with that, our program, we were with Beard. It was he was very emotional and so very intense you know, I learned a lot from Coach and Beard, and I appreciate him giving this opportunity. And we're very close. You know, he calls us brothers. I hope he learned a few things from me as well. But I don't know if I've got one. I've got 1,000 stories. Probably I couldn't tell you here on the air. But I would say that, you know, winning. I've heard him say I'd cut my leg off to win a national championship. So that just tells you a little about his commitment to winning.
I'm talking about Sean Sutton. I'm not talking about Coach Beard.
Oh, you're talking about Sean Sutton. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, Coach Sutton, you know, is he's been with us for 4 or 5 years. You know, his dad's a legend and was one of my mentors. Sean's one of the smartest guys I've ever been around. And I'm very thankful for Sean because he wanted to stay here with me, gave, you know, just a lot of loyalty. We think a lot of Lockheed. Again, he has a lot higher IQ than I do. One of the smartest things I did was I recruited a good coaching staff around me. But Sean knows everybody. He's got a great basketball mind. And there's a lot of stories on Sean as well. But I tell you, one of the things that he does that's just unbelievable, he has this great relationship with parents and with the players. He has this way to connect with them. But I'm not going to tell him give me any of the dirt on Sean, except I'm just so grateful he's here. You may have some on him. You might want to say
that. I love him, but when I flew in, he picked me up, and he got lost on the way back to the campus. And I never laughed so hard in my life. I mean,
yeah, he's focused. He's like most of his coaches. He's so focused. He may, forget where he's going because his mind's always thinking basketball.
Oh, he had great conversations. Now tell us about the practice facility, because I remember that was a vision when I was out there.
Yeah, and I'm fortunate that I get to be the head coach to have the first practice in here and to sort off our new recruits and all. But it's called the Womble. Dusty Womble, one of our supporters, built it. This is about $40 million facility. I think one of the things that stands out is we've got this unbelievable video board on the end zone. It goes from, you look at the sidelines, it's 50 feet wide. It goes to about 80 feet. So it's 80 feet wide and it's about 25 feet in height. So the challenge with that is that it's got, you can actually watch a couple NBA games if you wanted to on it. But for us all is how to use it, because there's just so many things we can do with it. We're going to be able to use it scouting and different ways to motivate our players, our practice schedule we can put up there. We do an instruction video and these guys are in there working on their own with individuals' workouts. It's just limitless the things we can do. But it's, as soon as you walk in, it's something that you're just in awe when you see how big this thing is. And then this practice facility, it's all inclusive. So our locker room's over here, of course, training and weight room. And we got one of the biggest weight rooms in the country. So offices are here. It's just, I can't imagine another facility that compete with this on the NBA level or the Cleats level.
Coach, I got to go back to something. You said that Coach Beard would cut off his leg. Mike Vrabel, the coach of the Tennessee Titans, said that he would cut off something far more important to some man if he got Coach, you got five transfers. You just got a hell of a player out of UTEP. You think we always talk about Eric Musselman and, the success he's had because he's dealt in the junior college ranks. He's dealt in the NBA, the G League, where you got to put guys together quicker, Every coach is going to have to do that now, really. But your experience as a junior college kid, all of a sudden putting together a team with five transfers, that's something that's not foreign to you, correct?
Yeah, that's a great point, Dan. I guess about my fourth or fifth year at Howard College, everything changed. And we got these Division I transfers to start coming in. And that's actually, I won a national championship with some of those guys. But they're either transfers, either Division I or from another junior college. So, we're all about winning now. We want to do things the right way and don't take shortcuts. But I've had a lot of experience with that and success with getting guys in your program, getting acclimated and get them to buy in on what we want to do.
Now, Coach, you're a defensive guru. I mean, like you study it like very few people. What is your team going to look like next year?
Well, I get that label and I'm appreciative of it. I love defense. I think that's kind of the essence of teamwork is on the defensive end. And you have to have all five guys working together if you want to play the tight ends. You guys both appreciate defense as well as I do. But, we recruited guys with length and athleticism. I think we're going to be long with our experience. So we'll hang our hat again on the defense. It'll be our identity. But at the same time, people have been shocked. I've never recruited a defensive player. I've never gone off, we got to find this guy. Now, Tariq Owens came in and we took him, of course, a great shot blocker. And since then, we're still looking for that shot blocker. But I feel like we can teach guys defense, and defense is about habits and that learned behavior. So you're building those instincts, and that just takes time and a commitment to it. But I'm still all about offense. That's the hardest to teach, get guys to pass, shoot and dribble. And I always tell people, you know, defense will keep you in the game, but offense is what knocks you out. So you got to be able to score points. And the best teams I've ever had, I'm fortunate to have been in 3 national championship games, and all 3 of those teams were great at scoring.
Yeah, I've said this for years on television, and I don't know if I was smart enough as a coach, don't think I was, but, you know, the teams that make runs score in the 80s. You know, like, it's just – you look at the teams that have been successful, obviously there's some blue bloods, but really anybody can play if you're in the 50s and 60s, but you get in the 80s, there's very few teams that can get there, right? I mean, that's offense. Yeah, huge.
That's one thing I tell our assistant coaches recruiting. We're not quite to 80, but we feel like we need to at least get about 70, 75. We feel our defense will keep teams around 60, but we've got to find a way to score 70, 75 points.
Yeah.
How about the schedule, Coach? I mean, like, you guys did a lot of traveling in the past. You've gone to New York. You've done stuff out of, building, like, I guess, the brand of Texas Tech, which right now is a strong brand. What are you going to try to do with the schedule? Last year, scheduling was a little goofy with, obviously, the pandemic. How you're scheduling games, on a phone on a Monday and playing them on a Thursday. What do you guys have planned for next year?
I remember back when I was coaching at Pan American, Wimp Sanderson, after I lost him in an overtime game, he put his arm around me and he was being very nice and just said, he said, Hey Mark, he said, you're a really good coach. But let me tell you about winning. It's 3 things. And one is recruiting. And I just had better players than you got. And then he said, number 2 is scheduling. And he said, I won about 90% of my games at Alabama, and that's because, the way I scheduled. And then he said, coaching's way down there. So, but scheduling's a big, big part of winning. And strategically, you got to think about your what kind of team you have. We have some experience, but we're still new as far as getting to know each other. So, you'd like to have a schedule where you can learn a little bit about winning. And then as your non-conference moves along, you like to play some better competition. We've got good competition. We're playing Gonzaga, so we maybe overdid ourselves there. But we're excited about playing them. We'll play them in December. It's on a neutral floor in Phoenix, and then we just found out we're going to be in the Jimmy B Classic on December the 7th at Madison Square Garden again, which we love to play there and had some success, and we're excited about it. We're going to play Tennessee, so. We've got our work cut out for us there.
Wow, that's big time. A guy from your journey walking into the Garden as the head coach. It's got. I know for me, growing up, I was there when Willis came out of the tunnel, and they no longer have the same tunnel. But walking into that place is for a New Yorker. I don't know what about for a guy from Texas is just different. Than even Fogg and Cameron and the Dean Dome and the other places I've gotten a chance to coach. That's got to be a cool thing.
You're making me nervous thinking about that. But we're excited about it. We played Duke in the Garden and gave a run for their money, and it was a great experience. And we had an unbelievable crowd there. I mean, Coach Krzyzewski was shocked. I think we had as many fans as Duke did at that game. And then we were able to upset Louisville, and they were number 1 the country a few years ago. So it's been a great experience. Our guys are going to love it, and it's going to be a great exposure for our program.
And don't play Duke in the Garden or in the United Center in Chicago. They cheat you. I mean, it's just like going into camera. They cheat you. I remember we beat them by 100 one year at Indiana, and we had to beat them by 200 in the Garden to win by 100. You know what I mean? It's just disgusting.
And you can get away with saying that. I have to just nod my head. That's when you're playing a legendary coach, and I'm sure when you were with Coach Knight, of course, Coach Knight coached here as well. I remember Doc Satter telling Pat Knight, and when he got the job, said, you're not going to get those extra 10 or 12 points that Coach Knight, your dad, got when he was coaching, but But, you know, it's and we've got a lot of great coaches in the Big 12. So we'll just try to keep a stone face on some of these calls. But our guys will be ready. But this is going to be a great great league to play in. And it's going to be fun to have the opportunity to get some of the best coaches in the country in the Big 12.
I thought we all got those 10 or 12 points. When I was sitting next to Coach Knight at Indiana, I'd nudge him. I'd say, hey, man, Hightower needs a lesson here. Stand up. And the next thing you know, Eddie Hightower would call five travels in a row against the other team. I thought I got those when I went to Bowling Green. You know what I got, Coach?
Technical.
I got a technical 14 seconds into my first game by a referee that said, sit down, I'm not taking that Bobby Knight tonight. So
yeah.
I learned there's only one, right?
Yeah. I'm sure Seth never got any technicals either. So
I got thrown out, the first trip to Durham. I got thrown out, 1:19 left. I mean, I don't understand why.
You guys aren't setting a good example for me.
No.
Hey, what's the one thing you want to tell your fans? Like going into the summer, you know, just like what's the vision or the message you want your people to know? This is what we're doing, and this is what we're getting ready for.
You know, Seth, first of all, one of the reasons that I was hired, when I was considered for this job, you know, I was all worried I was just going to get a token interview, just being an assistant coach. And I think one of the biggest reasons we had such great outpouring of support from this community and our fan base and the Red Raider Nation, it was just humbling to have so many that the text message and the phone calls that our administrators received, they said they were, very, you know, in fact, in my interview, that's both the president and athletic director said, we just couldn't believe how many people had called on your behalf. And I don't know if I take that as a compliment or not, but I don't know what they were. They just said surprised. And I was appreciative because I think this community, I think they wanted somebody that's here that understands West Texas and grew up in this area in West Texas and has my degree from here. And then I appreciate our defense. These are a bunch of hardworking people out here that appreciate the grind and the toughness that we showed on that end. And so my message is that I'm excited. I'm grateful for their support. We feel like the best fans in the country. And when they see us in November, we hope they see a team that's tough, aggressive, that's physical, that has that fight when we step on the floor, that they're going to be proud of our guys as they dive on the floor, take those charges and are huddling up and have the chemistry and the connection that they'll appreciate.
That's awesome. Well, Coach, I look forward to seeing you. Hopefully we get back out there for a game. I like I said, I had a great time there, and I'm really excited for you because you know, you more than have paid your dues and you know, again, coaching's coaching. It really is. And you'll do a great job. And we appreciate, I know you got a bunch of stuff going on, but we appreciate you spending some time with us, especially because Dockage is on. You know, you never know you're going to get him.
Well, I'm going to get both you guys out here, but just in closing, I feel very blessed that God's given us opportunity. And so we'll get both you guys out here to double team us and talk to our team. So, I look forward to getting you two out here talking to us. But thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.